Saturday, September 20th and 21st. Spyro Gyro celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
Freedom. My name is M1. I'm half of the legendary Tell It Like It Is, Everything Is Political rap duo Dead Prez. And this is WPFW, Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Collision. This is your home for where sports and politics glide at your extra special home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time, because we're your home for Jazz and Justice. So thrilled to have on the show with me today, first and foremost, 10-year NBA veteran, author, poet, and man about town, Etan Thomas. How you doing, sir?
How you doing, Dave?
Oh, man, great to have you with us, Etan, as always. And, of course, Modi himself, Chuck Modiano. How you doing, Chuck?
Doing great, DZ.
Oh, man, do we have some stuff to cover today. We have the fact that one of the vice presidents of our Washington Commanders, a man named Rael Antin, was recorded surreptitiously without his knowledge and spoke all kinds of things about the NFL. Very worth talking about as today is the start of the NFL season. We're going to talk about Caitlin Clark and how the WNBA is exploding right now, but also some of the reactions to Caitlin Clark, which are garnering all kinds of controversy. And of course, the NFL season does begin today. Will it start with a MAGA bang? Or a Tim Walz pancake block? We'll talk about that. But first, we do have to talk about some sad things to start the show. First and foremost, I know that it would mean a lot to me to dedicate this hour to Kenyan Olympic marathoner Rebecca Cheptegei, who was burned to death by her boyfriend, although it feels obscene even calling him that. In a case of what is rightly called femicide, just violence against women to her death. So rest in peace, rest in power to Rebecca Cheptegei. Also, you know, since we are where sports and politics collide, we'd be remiss to not talk about, before we get to the sports stuff, the school shooting yesterday. Four people fatally shot, several others injured at Appalachie High School in the suburb of Winder, Georgia. And far less discussed, five people shot, one killed at the, what may be the biggest parade in the country, the West Indian Day of the West Indian America Day parade in Brooklyn on Monday. So first and foremost, to Etan Thomas, I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about this school shooting, which is just absolutely, I mean, I don't know about you, but it's like your heart just stops when you hear about these things. What were some of the points you'd like to make about that, sir?
I mean, there was so much, you know, with it, and we hear about them so much. It's almost like as a society, we get numb to it because it happens so regularly. But on the ride, a ride to school this morning with my daughter Imani, you know, anybody that takes teenagers, you know, to school, sometimes they want to talk, sometimes they don't. You know what I mean? Sometimes they're in a good mood, sometimes they're not in a talkative mood. Well, this morning Imani was in a talkative mood. And she asked me about the shooting, and she just had a barrage of questions that she just didn't understand. Like, you know, she said, well, if this keeps happening with the same kind of gun, AR-15s, why is this gun legal? Like, why would people need to have a gun where they could just, you know, kind of spray an entire place with just barely moving your wrists? Like, why? That's not for hunting. That's not for anything like that. Why would people need a gun? And then she said, why do people keep saying thoughts and prayers when they're the ones that can make the laws to be able to change different things so these guns wouldn't be on the street? She said, oh, what? And she just started going. And I was like, wow, okay, well, let's talk. You know, we're sitting in traffic and we're just discussing different things one after the other. She said, how did the police, you know, manage to take him, the shooter, alive? And but then looking at all these different things that happen when you have who they have a, they suspect that there possibly could be a gun, and they just start unloading on the kid, if it's a, you know, whoever it is. She just started going on all these different questions. So I asked her, I said, you know, do y'all talk about this in school? Like, is this like topics that y'all talk about in civics class or social studies or something like that? And she said, sometimes, but it makes the teachers so uncomfortable. You know what I mean? They don't want to talk about it too much, but then there's also some teachers that say, oh no, let's spend the day and let's talk about this. And I asked her if her friends discussed this. She's like, oh yeah, everybody's talking about this. You know, we all, you know, because it happens. She's like, we have school shooter, what is it called? Were they
drills? Practice?
Drills, right. And she's like, people asked, she was like, well, we're doing these drills to keep ourselves safe, but what is the school shooters inside with us? You know, so she's just asking all these different things. And we started talking about different bullying and, you know, kids having all, and it's just amazing. But it's just, the more you hear these things happen, then you turn on the radio, turn on the news, and you see the same patterns happen from the politicians. They say, you know, thoughts and prayers. That's all. Like, I just, you know, just saw like five different politicians say the same thing. And then in the next breath, they say, you know, we need to protect everybody's gun rights. And I was like, okay, you can't even take a second before you get to that part. Like, you can't even just focus on these four people who lost their lives, you know what I mean, senselessly, before you get to the gun rights and all that stuff. And it's a continuous pattern that doesn't seem to change, no matter how many shootings that we have.
And before I throw it to Chuck, one of the aspects that bothers me so much is when these school shootings happen. And first of all, I hate that it's when and not if at this point in our lives. What you get out of that from the right wing is often, well, we have not just thoughts and prayers, but they have a new line where they say, well, there's a mental health crisis in this country. Right. It's not about the guns. It's about mental health. Mm-hmm. And I say, okay, well, show and prove then. What are you doing? What are you doing to subsidize therapy? What are you doing to make sure that there are counselors in every school? What are you doing about that then? Because if you're just going to say it's about mental health and you're still just shrugging your shoulders and saying thoughts and prayers, then that's just malarkey. You know, that's just putting a line forward so you don't have to deal with this. Another just quick thing, Etan, is my gosh, your daughter, Imani, I mean, so intelligent, so incisive in talking about this. One thing I would also say to her, I mean, just personally, is like, it's not like these guns have been legal you know, because of the Second Amendment since the moment they came off the assembly line. It was George W. Bush that legalized the AR-15. So we're not going that far back here. Like, it was illegal to have one as recently as the 1990s. So no school shooting with AR-15s. And now when you look at the list of school shootings, you know, people have made these lists that are dozens and dozens of schools or communities long, and then they put the gun next to it, and it's almost entirely this AR-15. So you can't tell me that some form of gun control would not make a difference in these situations, that they would not, in fact, save lives. Yeah, it's a tough one. Chuck, did you have anything you wanted to add about this before
we go on? It's like Groundhog's Day. It's like Groundhog's Day. How many times are we going to have the same conversation over and over and over? And, you know, we all lead to capitalism. It brings us back to the NRA. That's what we're really talking about right here. And then, you know, when Bush did that, something else happened. After Gore lost, the Democrats made a calculation. They said, we are not going to fight on gun control anymore. Many Democrats blamed, I mean, you could blame 50,000 things, but they blamed the gun control issue and why they lost. They said the NRA is too powerful. And yet, I really haven't seen Democrats fight that since 2000. And so when we see this at the heart, that neither party really wants to have a fight, it also reminds me right now of with the genocide in Gaza, that neither party, both bought by AIPAC and Kufi and the military-industrial complex, wants to have a fight. So when we follow the crumbs and we follow the trail, it comes back to money, it comes back to bribery, it comes back to capitalism.
You know, I would throw on to that as well, Chuck, and this is an observation of Magic Mike, who sometimes texts me during the broadcast, that this thoughts and prayers rhetoric is also not the exclusive province of the Republican Party, because you do hear that from Democrats, versions of that around Gaza. You know, speaking about it as if it's like the way Republicans talk about school shootings, I see similarities in how the Democratic Party talks about Gaza. Maybe they don't use the words thoughts and prayers, but they speak about it in this passive language. Yeah. Like, this is so terrible. Civilian death is so terrible. As if there's a disease running through Gaza. And frankly, there are many diseases running through Gaza, including polio. But they speak about it in a way that reeks with passivity, and not, we are in charge of the most powerful country and the number one arms dealer on Earth. Maybe we could do something about it. And that's very maddening and frustrating.
It's maddening. On Monday, they say, oh, it's terrible about the civilian casualties and civilian losses. And on Tuesday, they're sending $20 billion over to Israel. So in any relationship, we look at actions. On politicians, we look at actions. We don't look at their words.
Mm. Oh, I 100% agree. And that was Imani's point as far as seeing the different politicians specifically right after a school shooting. Like, you're like, not even get the thoughts and prayers out yet, you know, without the comma, but now let's talk about gun, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's not even pretending to really want to do something about it, because then the discussion shifts as to like, okay, we have to not, you know, take away all guns. We can't, you know, we're like, well, nobody said that. You know, the sensible you know, laws that can be put into place, just take one as background checks. Just take that one, just background checks. What is the rationale of not wanting background checks on a gun? Like, I don't understand that at all. Like, you, if even if you want, you know, they say the sensible, the responsible, the, you know what I mean, gun owner that is able to be able to do, okay, so why would you want anybody that has anything going on, you know, to be able to just walk into any place and leave with a gun the same day with no background check? Why would you want that? And then why would you, any human being, need an AR-15? Like, that's the one where, and I hate doing it, but I still, you know, look and see what they're going to say. Maybe something's going to be different, you know, kind of hoping for some kind of, you know, inkling of humanity or something like that coming from politicians that,
that, you know, on a topic where you have something as terrible as a mass shooting, and it's literally, you could go back to, you know, every single mass shooting that we've had over the past decades. Go back to Columbine. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Go back to all of those. Michael Moore had an amazing documentary that should have moved the needle. It should have mm-hmm. changed people's opinions and views and everything like that on this topic. And it did for some people, but then for other people, it like didn't do anything. So it's just, you know, it's sickening when you see it happen over and over again. And then when you see those same politicians, like you said, who have the power to be able to change something, do nothing.
No, it can be extremely frustrating to view the cycle of violence. I'm glad you mentioned the Michael Moore movie, Bowling for Columbine. I think people need to see that. I also think it's fascinating that in our lifetimes, the three of us, all roughly the same age, the three of us here on The Collision, mm-hmm. we have seen the rhetoric of the right also change between saying, wait a minute, we need these guns for hunting, or we need these guns for home protection. Have you noticed that the rhetoric has changed to where they're now like, we need these guns as a hedge against government tyranny, or we need these guns because we might need, you know, they all talk about Second Amendment solutions if the liberals, you know, overstep. And it's very dangerous, and it's very martial, and it's very of a Trumpian January 6th vibe where, you know, they feel like they're arming themselves and politicians are allowing them to do it. So anything like a background check, a mental health check, any of these things is seen as an obstacle for the arming of the right wing. And that's why in a lot of these red states, it's a lot easier to buy an AR-15 than vote.
No, 100%. I mean, if you just look at the rhetoric, one side is preparing for an election, the other side is preparing for a war. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say everybody in that side. I'm not saying that like every Republican, I'm not saying that. But when you hear the rhetoric that you're referring to, you can't help but understand that no, they're preparing for something different. This is not about just you know, casting a vote. And the almost threat that if things don't go their way, that it's going to be worse than what we saw in January 6th. Like, that's the sentiment that is out there. And it has gotten worse since, you know, Elon Musk took over Twitter. Like, it wasn't as bad as before, as blatant, or maybe it was a little bit more hidden. But it's not even, like, you don't even have to decipher what they're saying, what they're tweeting, you know what I mean? It's there in plain sight. And then you have the politicians who are fanning those flames. So, you know, the frustrating part is that there's no accountability. You know, if you're talking about, you know, members of the media or politicians who are fanning those flames for those people to be able to create an atmosphere where they feel the need to arm themselves to the T, and then things don't go their way, and then you have a January 6th happen. I mean, that's the part where, you know, you're looking for some type of accountability, and this is going into kind of a different realm of the role of the media. The media has to be held accountable when things like this happen, and they're not. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's not as if you can't roll back the tape and see exactly what they said to fan the flames. It's just there's no accountability, and that's we're in a real dangerous place right now overall, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better.
It's dangerous no matter what. And no matter what happens, it's dangerous. And I want to add something about that Twitter piece, because, you know, I was covering Nazi rallies prior to 2016, and it was the wild, wild west. Everyone was on there. But the difference was, I remember Nazis came at me in droves, right? But I also remember human rights activists were also on Twitter. And what Elon Musk has done, because a lot of the white supremacists were banned from Twitter, and what Elon Musk has done, he's brought back the white supremacists, but mm-hmm. his... hiddenly eliminated and banned a lot of human rights activists, whether they're fighting for a free Palestine, whether they're fighting against Nazis. That if you're fighting against Nazis or for a free Palestine, you're more likely to be banned on Twitter quietly than you are if you're a white supremacist. And people on Twitter don't come to save you. So if somebody who is a white supremacist is banned, you have like the whole right-wing machine on Twitter lobbying for them. If a human rights activist is banned, nobody comes for them outside of a few of us.
Wow. And let's also be clear that this isn't just in case people aren't as familiar with Twitter or X as this social media tool. Elon Musk is, from apartheid South Africa. He is very much a white supremacist, very much post stuff, repost stuff that's about eugenics, like the real, like pseudoscience of white supremacy. He's very much into, and he's now supporting Donald Trump to the point of tens of millions of dollars every month. So the entire operation is a disinformation machine to support Donald Trump. And one of the fascinating things about this election is we're going to see how powerful that is on the electorate. Like, will having the richest man on earth, who owns probably the most prominent social media communicator on earth, will that be actually something that can shift a presidential election? I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, we're going to definitely find out. And I try not to look at polls, because polls could definitely be, you know what I mean, deceiving. You look at a lot of different polls and you see, you know, Kamala Harris is ahead in this state and ahead in this state. So I don't want people to start, you know, relaxing once they see that there was a little bit of an upsurge, you know, after the convention, after, you know, some of the speeches, there was a little bit of upsurge in the support for Kamala Harris. But there are things that the right are kind of dug into, you know, their positions, and then they have their own surge. And you're looking at the rhetoric. This is another example of something that can and will kind of rally them, is this notion, because what's going to happen is they say, see, now the liberals and the radical left are going to try to take away your Second Amendment rights and your guns, and that's already starting. So that's something that rallies them. So then those numbers that you see, you know what I mean, can sometimes change when they have something that they rally around. And I just, you know, caution people to, you know, don't see these polls and think that, okay, now we can kind of relax a little bit. There's no time to relax at all, because those things can change.
And I would add, either way, what people have to be ready for, whichever way the election turns, is to fight back. No matter what, is to fight, because there's going to be a white supremacy surge. Either way, there's going to be that. We have to be ready to fight back whoever is becomes president. Either way, the genocide is going to continue. So we got to be ready to fight back either way. So what I always say to people who whether someone is different than me on in electoral politics or not, what are you doing the other 364 days a year? What are we doing to combat white supremacy, to combat globally and locally, the other 364 days a year? And I think that is going to determine, you know, where this country goes more than anything else. Because one of the things that scares me a little bit when I'm hearing, I call it the Biden shift, all right? And I think to some degree, Kamala is doing that, is the certain language that is, we're tougher than you on immigration. We're going to be tougher than you on genocide. And will we replicate some of the policies that we're hearing from the right wing? So I just feel like no matter what happens, we have to be ready to fight 364 days a year.
Well, we will find out. And honestly, Chuck, just a quick addendum to that. You might have to say 365, not 364, because we might have to be in a position where we're defending people's right to vote, like having demonstrations, yeah, Pickets, because especially not in Maryland at all, but in Virginia, there's going to be open efforts to intimidate voters. And, you know, we might have to be there just to ensure people's basic right to suffrage.
There's no question. I just want to add one thing, is that a lot of people aren't aware that in Atlanta, there was voter suppression for the against the Stop Cop City movement, and that has been happening, and 61 protesters were arrested in a Democratic administration, and that the local Atlanta administration, what they did is they blocked a referendum for a vote on Cop City. And I just say that to say is that voter suppression is happening right now. Will it become worse? Yeah, probably become worse. And we have to fight it wherever it is. So I just say that wherever we are, we have to fight voter suppression. Whoever is in charge, we have to fight voter suppression.
Chuck, moving on here, we got so much to cover.
Yeah.
Y'all are both brilliant, so that's why we get lost on topics here on The Collision. So just please be less brilliant next week, fellas. Dumb it down a little bit. No.
You mean long-winded. You mean long-winded. We both.
No, I do not mean long-winded. Actually, I think you're both really good at making very, very difficult political concepts succinct and legible and clear for the listener. But hey, and this isn't compliment day. So before we do a break at the bottom of the hour, and then we're going to talk about everything that's going on with the Washington Commanders. But first, Chuck, before we go, give us just a little piece about this demonstration at Georgetown yesterday. Very important demonstration at the start of the school year.
Sure. The demonstrations are continuing. There's a lot of new rules that universities are putting in place to hinder future protestings, but the future protests, but it's happening. It was Georgetown University yesterday. We're back in swing. I think there was a great turnout of Georgetown students, and I got to interview people, including a Holocaust survivor who keeps coming back to these protests and was at the very first one at George Washington. But the one part that stood out is that I was speaking to a young woman, and that what they said is one of the new stipulations by Georgetown University is that the protesters have to pay for the police. $65 per police officer that they don't want, that they say makes them less safe, but they have to pay for that. And now they just reinstituting this rule saying that these protests make certain people feel unsafe. Well, who does it make feel unsafe? Because none of the protesters feel safer with the police there. It probably makes some Zionist in management safe and a tool to deter protests. I don't know the legality. It seems unconstitutional. It seems messed up. But that was the new nugget that came out of yesterday's protest, having protesters pay for the police officers that they don't want there.
Wow. Crazy. Is this out of the student funds that they're paying for the police officers, like their group student funds?
I didn't ask that follow-up question. I should have. That's why you're a better interviewer than I am, DZ. So I should have.
Well, I'm just curious. Well, no, it's. I'll tell you why it's an important question, because organizations get different levels of budgets. So, you know, how much it impacts an organization's ability to even function. If they're having to pay police officers, forget about the morality of having to pay police officers. The second thing is, you know, Georgetown has this area called Red Square. And at least back in the day, you know, that was like a demonstration safe zone. Like anybody could call like a picket in Red Square. I don't know if that's still the case. But if, say, a lone student says, hey, I want to do a picket about Palestine, that lone student might be on the hook for a phalanx of police officers to come there. Yes. That's crazy to me.
It's a deterrent. And for those folks who don't know, you know, the Georgetown bubble, as it has been put to me, is something real. We know Georgetown doesn't have a metro. And quite intentionally, you know, and quite racist, it's a racist piece to keep the quote-unquote riffraff out of Georgetown. So when you're protesting at Georgetown, it has a little bit of a different dimension than some of the other 9 universities in the DMV.
Although I will just add to that as a quick counterpoint, that Georgetown also, more than GW, employs just some of the leading State Department Zionists who come there to lecture and teach. Mm. So actually breaking through the bubble and having a demo like that at Georgetown is very significant.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a symbolic power that I think is a breakthrough for the local movement.
Do you know that Georgetown has a School of Social Justice? That's the name not doing their job.
I almost spit my iced coffee with that one, Chuck. It would have landed on my computer. I would have been cross with you.
It's a Jesuit university.
Hey, man, I mess with the Jesuits. They got to do better than this. Let's go to a quick break right now here on The Collision. When we come back, it's all things Commanders. Scandal, scandal, scandal. I want to hear what the folks think about it. Maybe for Magic Mike, we'll say something nice about their new quarterback, Jaden Daniels, as well. Yeah. Mike is so salty because we only talk about the Commanders when there's scandal. But, yo, let's go to break right now. We'll be back right after this on The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
Sometimes I wonder, do I deserve to live? Or am I gonna burn the hell for all the things? These feet run towards trouble, and these hands reach out to steal. These eyes covered in words come out this mouth to kill. These ears ignore warnings. His thoughts are corrupt, it's disturbing. His heart's full of lust and perversion. But deep within, underneath the skin, a spirit fights the flesh, trying to beat it in to submission, cause it grieves him when the flesh hungers for secret sin, trying to feast and binge. They split two ways, one exists to praise, the other is disengaged, so it disappears. Obeys. It would rather call up chicks than pray, roll a spliff and blaze, than study and flip a page. See, it wants to return to its sinful ways, but something inside is keeping this at bay. It be the spirit of God that fights against the crave, keeping it restrained before it can misbehave, yeah.
It's living as if it don't mind now, cause it makes bad decisions, yeah, I
fell. Who are we listening to as we're back here on The Collision on WPFW and Sports and Politics Collide?
That was Dayton, talented rapper. We didn't play it too long, but that was a talented rapper. He's socially conscious. He talks about a lot of different things in his raps. You know what I mean? One of those people that are a little bit more underground, but much props to him, Dayton.
Spelled like Dayton, Ohio, D-A-Y-T-O-N?
No, D-A-T-I-N.
Oh, that's Dayton. Oh, yeah. Very nice. Glad I asked.
And I'm glad that Tom's been doubling up as a DJ lately, you know, bringing the heat. I really appreciate it. Magic Mike, is he gonna take over your spot?
He already has. No.
There's only one Magic Mike. That is not my area.
No, it's your area, but you're a great duo. Let's look at it like that.
My son does a good job of playing stuff in the car to keep me up, partly because I have a no Drake rule for the car. So it allows
no Drake rule.
I do. Yeah. It's the one, I just can't. I've tried, you know, want to be a good dad, have him share the music, but...
I'm going to have to adopt that rule.
It helps. It helps my mental health.
The funny part, my kids are so anti-Drake, but my daughter, Imani, she doesn't like Drake a long time ago. She's been very anti-Drake a long time ago because she says that he takes people's music and claims it as his own, and there's all these different young artists that she likes that he's done this to, and she's been saying that for a very long time. She'll go on a whole long tirade about it if anybody brings up Drake.
You just filled my heart. Let's just get her together with Jacob so she can school him, please, because this is driving me a little bit crazy. Okay, before we talk our Commanders, I got a public service announcement that I'm really excited to give. Sponsored by the local station board of WPFW 89.3 FM on September the 14th. Today is the 5th, so in 9 days, from 1 to 7 p.m. at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, we are doing the WPFW 5K run walk for total fitness.
Get in shape.
Physical. What's that?
I said, get in shape, Dave. Show up.
I'll show up. Are you kidding me? 5K? That shouldn't be too bad. What is that? Like five blocks? Promoting? Isn't every K like, you know, a New York City block?
One walk.
5K. Promoting physical, mental, and emotional wellness. I'll hand out some water as people go by. But and I'll sponsor somebody just to show you that I'm keeping it real. $40 per person. Free for children under 12. Rain or shine, it's going to be fantastic. Help promote the importance of physical, mental, and emotional well-being. We're going to have also some fitness classes and activities. Tai Chi, no chai tea, but we're going to have some Tai Chi. line dancing, yoga, double dutch, jumping, which I actually used to do, believe it or not. I'm not even playing. Meditation and hand dancing. It's going to be fantastic. Register online, WPFWFM.org. Sound good, fellas?
Yeah, but it's sad to hear you talk about the glory days at your young age.
Oh, man. No. When I was a public school teacher in my early 20s, I had to learn double dutch because I had students who looked at me a little bit side-eye. And once I mastered it, at least master is such the wrong word. Once I did it without tripping and falling on my face, I did get a little bit of cred in the classroom. So,
all right.
That was important. All right. Let's talk about Ra'alin Teen, vice president with the Commanders. And ooh, have I been excited to ask Etan about this, Chuck as well. An organization called the O'Keefe Media Group. They are notoriously corrupt. They are notoriously right-wing. They are notoriously messed up organization. I can't stand even, but I'm saying them so people know where this has come from. It's important that you know the source of these things. But what they recorded of Ra'alin Teen, he did not know he was being recorded, which is actually, I believe, illegal in Maryland to do a one-way recording of somebody without their knowledge. I don't know if it was in Maryland or Virginia, though, but that's something worth that I'm going to be looking into probably right after this broadcast. Was it legal to record Ra'alin Teen? But Ra'alin Teen, I assume this stuff is not manipulated because he's already been put on leave by the Commanders. It was actually like a record amount of time.
Yeah, let me just say, I think it's illegal everywhere. But
really?
Yeah. I mean, that came out with the Sterling thing. That it was technically right. Illegal for him to have been recorded, but people still heard it. But continue.
No, I'm glad you said that. That's really important because I want these O'Keefe people attacked in the aftermath of this as well. So some things Ra'alin Teen said. He said most NFL fans, he said, are high school educated alcoholics. He described NFL fans as violent, saying there's fights in the stands all the time. He was asked to describe the Commanders players, and he said a big chunk is very low income African Americans that comes from a community that is inherently very homophobic. He then said, I love hip hop. Hip hop is very homophobic. It's a cultural thing that I hope gets better. He criticized the social justice initiatives of the NFL, calling them performative for the sake of public perception. When asked about the NFL's commitment to Black Lives Matter, pride, diversity, equity, inclusion, he says it's to make as much money as possible. That's all. He denounced Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, as a $50 million puppet controlled by the owners. And he called Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, who he claims really runs the NFL, of harboring deep-seated biases, saying, I think he hates gay people and black people, is the assessment of Jerry Jones. So, Etan, there's some stuff there that obviously, you know, is offensive and untoward and a stereotype and all the rest of it. There's other stuff in there that you look at it twice and say, huh, not bad. It's like that meme, the famous meme on Twitter of Alonzo Mourning shaking his head. And then it waits a second and then he kind of nods his head. It's what I felt reading this. Any reactions to a couple of truth bombs there by the Washington Commanders, now suspended VP?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how the sponsors react to this. That's what really matters, because the you know, and drawing the parallel between you know, and I just saw, I don't know if you watched the show Clipped, it was on FX, that shows the whole thing that happened with Sterling, but nothing changes until the sponsors start reacting. Nothing changes. People get upset. People get, you know, can talk. And he did get suspended. But to see what happens if the sponsors start threatening to pull out, if the sponsors start saying that because of this, I can no longer support the Washington Commanders as an organization, then you will see, you know, something happen. But until then, and if that doesn't happen, and you can correct me if it has happened, I haven't seen any of that happen as of yet. It'll be swept under the rug within, you know, whatever time frame.
That's my prediction.
What about your prediction about Rylantin getting his job back? You think he's just done as barbecued chicken here, or you think he has a shot to come back once the waters have calmed? He's supposed to be very good at his job.
No, that's what I'm saying. 100% he will be brought back. When it's almost like when the police officer is you know, put on paid administrative leave until everything starts, you know, kind of quieting down, and they're quietly brought back, like as if nothing happened. If there's nothing that then transpires as far as sponsorship, as far as people pulling out, sponsorships actually pulling out and labeling this as the reason, my prediction is that he will be quietly brought back after everything kind of quiets down. That's my prediction.
Interesting. What sings out to you, Chuck, in this goulash, this bouillabaisse of hot takes by Rylantin?
It's a goulash, all right. And say bouillabaisse one more time. I need to hear it.
Oh, bouillabaisse.
Okay, right. It's that. Well, you know, there's so many, some that are negative about what was said, but I do want to get a quote in here where he was talking about the league's social justice initiatives, Entin. It's not done out of the goodness of their heart, he said. It's done because George Floyd changed the game. It is to make as much money as possible. The NFL cares about the bottom line, like any corporation, above all else. They can faux prioritize DEI for the sake of good publicity. And of course, we're thinking about when they put words like racism in the and racism in the end zone while banning Colin Kaepernick, right? So he's saying things that we already knew, and probably his biggest I guess faux pas is critiquing Roger Goodell as a puppet for the 50 owners. That's true. And critiquing Jerry Jones and other owners.
Yeah, saying Jerry Jones really runs the NFL and hates gay people and black people, you know, that's some heavy truth bombs. It's not something I think anybody would be shocked by. But to me, what makes this interesting is you think there's an NFL truth, and then there's the rest of us looking at this saying, yeah, right, this emperor has no clothes. And yet they're actually saying that themselves, that this emperor has no clothes. Like, it's not a cult in the NFL. They're looking at this and they're seeing all of the ridiculousness that takes place behind the scenes, all the faux language of progressiveness, all the faux. But what makes this more volcanic, more explosive, is that, yeah, a lot of corporations after the murder of George Floyd by the coward Derek Chauvin, like a lot of corporations. I remember Mercedes-Benz saying, Mercedes, where Black Lives Matter, and all these things like that. None of these corporations depend so heavily on black minds and black bodies as their labor. So for them to, and they're obviously, there's no corporation probably more public facing than the NFL, where you have people, millions of people tune in to see that labor on a weekly basis. So this has the potential to be volcanic, but my take, and actually, frankly, it vibes very strongly with Etan's take, and it's not just because Etan said it, I had this written down beforehand, is that for this to happen with the explosion of the start of the season, tonight, it kicks off tomorrow night in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and then all day Sunday. Yeah, this is going to get swept under the rug mighty quick. We'll see if any of the broadcasters or pregame shows mention it tonight, but dollars to donuts, that is going to get on the cutting room floor. That's not what they're going to be talking about.
No, I don't think they are, unless they're going to be pushed to do it. I mean, I think the players could definitely take offense to what he said about them, whether they will say anything or make any type of statement or, you know, hold any kind of gripe for it. I don't know. I think the fans could probably take offense to what he said about them. You know, but then, like I said, you know, it's really those sponsors that really move the needle. And it's, you know, and it doesn't even matter if people are agreeing with what he said or disagreeing with it. It's about the level of outrage that happens from the sponsors. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what it keeps boiling down to, from seeing different things with different, you know, teams have said different things in the past. And I mean, look, and I'm making the parallel with Sterling. I don't think anything would have happened if the sponsors didn't start pulling out with Sterling. Mm. No matter what. Sterling has been Sterling for a very long time before that. And I don't know if y'all have seen and watched the show, but it kind of brought everything back watching the show depicted. And some of the people, the casting for the players was very hilarious. That's a side note. But
yeah.
But the show showed that it put it back into place. That, you know, although people knew about Sterling and his racism and the things about that nature, even long before that, it showed the element with Elgin Baylor. It showed, you know, Doc Rivers saying, and of course it's TV, but it's depicting the reality that everybody knew about his racism for a long time. David Stern knew about the level of the lawsuits, and he set the record for, but nothing happened. Nothing mm-hmm. happened until, and I would stand on this and keep saying it, until sponsors pulled out. So I think everything's going to be swept under the rug.
And an audio tape. Tom, to your point, how many years was he having housing discrimination lawsuits, discriminating against Black people? And he even had quotes like the famous one of Vic the Bee. And that was out there, and there were articles out there, and nothing mm-hmm. was happening. Then you had an audio tape. But you're right. Ultimately, you have to hit them in the bottom line. And yep. I'm in agreement with you. And then, Teen, to your point, he called Black players dumb as hell. We have to mm-hmm. Mention that certainly as well. But I'm in agreement with you that this is going to blow away. I'm in agreement with you, Dave. It's going to blow over, because we've seen the NFL do this with much bigger scandals, even including Peyton Manning HGH scandal, which was one of the greatest investigative reports I've ever seen during the Super Bowl. They made it go away in 2 days. So the NFL has that type of power.
And do you remember what news organization broke the story on Peyton Manning?
Al Jazeera.
Yep, it wasn't AJ, NBC.
That's right.
It was Al Jazeera, which is just, to me, wild and interesting in so many ways, the way Al Jazeera is demonized. It's not just that they take on Israel, they take on the NFL. But a quick addendum, Matan, like I think this is more of a yes and than a no but to what you said. Mm-hmm. But I also see a crisis right now with the NFL Players Association. Like, I really do feel like if Damaris Smith was still the executive director of the union, he would have put out a comment about this. He would have put out something to show that the union is watching, that the union wants answers. The union wants to know about DEI initiatives in the league and if they're legitimate or if they're just for show. But the new head of the NFLPA is a gentleman named Lloyd Howell Jr. And he doesn't come from a labor background. He doesn't come from a legal background the way Damaris Smith came from a legal background. He comes from being the CEO of Booz Allen. So you got a CEO in charge of the union. And to not have a player's response to not just this, but I think in the future, you're going to see more lack of players' response, because that's just going to be the style of the new union. I think that's a problem as well. It becomes a union issue. Mm. Just putting that out there for thoughts. Yeah. And maybe I'm saying this also because Damaris Smith was a friend of the show and Lloyd Howell Jr. doesn't record calls. I mean, return calls. But, you know, that's not a small thing. Okay. Not a small thing. We only have we're running out. This went by so fast. We've only got a few minutes left. Caitlin Clark is a very important story right now. Etan, I'm going to throw one stat at you, and you tell me what you think. We all see Caitlin Clark is killing it for the Indiana Fever in the WNBA. The team started 1-8, and now they've locked up. They if the season ended today, would be in the playoffs. So a heck of a response. Caitlin Clark's been amazing since the Olympics, which gave her a month off after nonstop play and pressure for a long time. You could absolutely say the same thing about Angel Reese, who's setting rebounding records, not just for rookies, but overall rebounding records in the league. I'll throw out this stat at you, Etan, and just I would just love your reaction to it. This is crazy to me. 17% of all flagrant fouls committed in the WNBA have been committed against Caitlin Clark. I mean, that's not a little wild.
No, I got to tell you, I would like to see the stat of flagrant fouls coming against like all hotshot rookies that come in the NBA or come in.
Yep.
The WNBA. I would like to compare it to that, because every time that I've seen that stat being put out there, they're like, oh, see, everyone is targeting Caitlin Clark and they don't like her because she's white and she's all of it. And that's what follows along with it. But I was like, okay, well, let's see. Let's go back to Jordan. Let's see how many, how many flagrant fouls. And they weren't even calling flagrant fouls back there. Just how many hard fouls that he had, you know, because a lot of those, we would see the clips of Jordan coming down the lane and just get clubbed over the head. And then the ref's just like, all right, get up. You know what I mean? I mean, that it was just different with the flagrant, how they was called. You know, there was no flopping back then. So you have, you know, I would like to see that compared to other rookies that came in of that level, of that prominence, of that everything, and how many hard fouls. Because then it would have to be hard fouls compared to flagrant, because they didn't call them that way back then. But let me just say this real quick. I know we, you know, have a little bit. The issue, and I posted something about Angel Reese, you know, not that long ago. She broke the record for the all-time, you know what I mean, rebounding, you know, everything like that. And I'm going through the comments, and it's just like, I would say every other white person that was commenting were like, hey, she's nothing compared to Caitlin Clark. Oh, Caitlin Clark is this. I was like, wait a minute. She just broke a record. I just posted this and reposted something that the Bleacher Report that did, congratulating Angel Reese. Why does it have to? I didn't even mention Caitlin Clark. Why did it have to? Why does it have to be one or the other? So I then posted this other meme that I saw, this picture of a lady that had a shirt that was like a jersey that was in half, and it said, like, you know, it was Clark, you know what I mean? And then it had Reese, and it had 5, and it had 22 and everything like that. And she was a fan of both. And I was like, see, you can't be a fan of both without, you know, you can praise one without tearing down the other. You know, you can do that. And the amount of war that was going on in the comment section, I was like, I thought this was a nice post. You know what I mean? But the issue is with Caitlin Clark fanatics that can't just say, okay, she's doing great. Yes, she just scored a triple-double. Yes, she just, but it's like, nobody else matters. Everybody else is horrible. She's saving the league. There is no, you got to understand, you know, yeah, Candace Parker won both Rookie of the Year and the MVP. Like, not that, you know, with her rookie year. She did. Candace Parker did do that. You know what I mean? That just, you know, so it's like, Caitlin Clark didn't discover the WNBA. She's great, but just, it's like, okay, you don't have to tear down everybody else in the history of the WNBA and currently to be able to praise Caitlin Clark.
Oh, very, very well put. Very much agreed. Chuck, any comments about Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and...
I agree.
The war that nobody asked for among fans in the WNBA, the war that nobody wanted, ridiculousness. I mean, and I shouldn't even say war because it implies something two-sided, the Caitlin Clark fan attacks on people who dare raise anything that's a dissent from the idea that she is saving the WNBA is really something. Any thoughts, Chuck, before we wrap up?
Definitely. And first of all, shout out to Angela Reese. Not only is she going to set the rebounding record, all-time WNBA rebounding record, but she's been balling with 15 rebounds per game since the beginning of July. And to put that in perspective, the rebounding record is 12.9, which she will shatter, but she's been doing it at 15 clip. So she's going to probably break her own record next year. So shout out. We know Caitlin Clark could ball and has improved much more, particularly since she realized she's a good passer and not and starts maybe pulling back a little on the three. She only shoots 34% from three. So, we know she can ball, but let's talk about this toxic mob and where it comes from. At least, I don't know the percentage, at least half of her fan base are psychotic, delusional, and lean white supremacists. It's the Barstool crowd. It is the right-wing Trump crowd that up till now have, for the most part, ignored all women's sports, that never watched a WNBA game before this year. They've ignored women's sports. They were not to be looked at. And maybe they might come down on Serena for a couple of years. And now they've entered what we've dealt with in male sports and this racism. They've entered the chat with the black women of the WNBA. And it's toxic and it's messed up. And it's almost impossible to have a good conversation on Caitlin Clark because they're there to hate. They are not there because of Caitlin Clark's greatness. They are there for Caitlin Clark's whiteness. And we need to be clear about that point. And we've talked about this and we could extrapolate more, but every single time we talk, we have to talk about it with that mob in mind and are your words inciting that mob. I'm actually quite scared. We could have a whole show on it. I'm scared for the future of how this Caitlin Clark phenomena plays out.
Well, well put, Chuck. Well put, Etan. Another terrific show in the books. Once again, we're dedicating this show to Kenyan Olympic marathoner Rebecca Cheptegei, burned to death, killed by her ex-boyfriend, femicide. We have to stand up to it. We have to say her name. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. From all of us at The Collision, we are out of here.
Lessons and blessings. I'm steady stressing perfection. I keep neglecting my ethics. So much text and a message. I'm trying to lessen my stressing. Finally understand my power. My presence is essence. They killed my daddy while my mama was pregnant. How I'm supposed to feel.
And they took my... Tom Cole, host of G-Strings, here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
Bethesda Theater presents the SOS Band on Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st. Spyro Gyral celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Words, Beats, and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy.
All right, all right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
Sophie's Parlor is the original women's radio collective. Wednesdays from 3 to 5 p.m., the best music divas on radio at 89.3 FM and sophiesparlor.blogspot.com.
Hey, it's that time again. Join WPFW as we move to get fit at the annual 5K run walk for total fitness. Dynamic fitness instructors will be there, free healthy snacks and water, exciting music, boat rides for families, and a double dutch contest and a hand dance contest are all included in the 5K fundraiser. This event takes place at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th. Now, for more details and how to register, visit our website, wpfw.org, or call 202-888-5484. That's 202-888-5484. Meet you at the park on Saturday, September 14th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. WPFW, making a better world one broadcast at a time.
Are you passionate about eradicating air pollution? Would you like to participate in the Environmental Justice Artivist Fellows Transformative Community Art Project in Ward 5, Washington, D.C.? We're seeking Ward 5 professional and amateur photographer portraits that capture the theme of what clean air in Ward 5 should be. Selected submissions will be featured in the Up in the Air mural design, which will be installed in a prominent Ward 5 location in fall 2024. Submission is free. The deadline is next Saturday, September 14th. Submissions can be made at socialartandculture.info.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries